Greetings, friends, and welcome to the GrogPod Roguelike Podcast and our 2025 winter special episode. The co-hosts have the week off this time, visiting with their families before being forced back into the procedurally generated dungeon that I've constructed for them to review and rank the games that we foist upon each other. And yeah, welcome. This is the episode in which I slapped together all the recordings and stuff that I have, I guess, now made a tradition, two in a row, of going to the Penny Arcade Expo, PAX West, here in downtown Seattle. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. Only had one day this time to go there, so as you can imagine, lots of limitations and stuff associated with that. And it's always one of those things where it's like you put out this huge battle plan of like, okay, I'm going to go from here to here, and you're drawing lines all over the map, and you're trying to figure out how best to get as much interesting stuff together as possible. And then you just come into the show floor and you're just completely overwhelmed by everything that you're looking at. And it's kind of fun to go back through these recordings and realize just how overstimulated and unprepared I was, even though I had this whole printout of like, gotta go over here and talk to this person, then go over there and talk to that person. It's just, there's never enough time, even with just starting right as the doors open. But I like to think that there might be something here useful for this week. So yeah, this is a bunch of developer interviews that were showcasing stuff at PAX, along with some extra bonus stuff. And yeah, I'll without any further ado, hand it off to Past Scott back in August of 2025. Thanks again, Future Scott, and yes, welcome back to the pass of August 2025. Hot off of the bus, bright and early here as I feel once again very self-conscious walking down the streets of downtown Seattle for PAX, the Penny Arcade Expo, hoping to get a full day's worth of content here. Checking out some new stuff that I haven't seen before, checking out some old stuff, possibly. It's always a interesting experience seeing what we can scrounge up. But if nothing else, lots of cool things here at PAX. Be sure to check out the previous episode I did last year with the same kind of similar format. Yeah, hoping to get some good interviews, hoping to see what is some cool player reactions of stuff. I remember last year, a lot of cool games that had a mile-long line associated with them, at least on Saturday. Today's Friday. And maybe I can actually get some good gaming time in, get some good previews, and see what's out there. Well, walking through the doors here at PAX, am pleasantly surprised to see just how many people there are checking the time, 10:30 on a Friday morning. Good turnout so far. I'm actually kind of pleasantly surprised, although this is the first 5 feet as you walk in through the door. Also, with that first 5 feet, you are bamboozled with a giant Bandai Namco booth, but also me personally bamboozled as to where Elden Ring Nightreign is. If Elden Ring Nightreign is not on screen, everyone has to be asking, where is Elden Ring Nightreign? Particularly after we had just done our episode on that a few days ago. This is Past Scott reporting here, of course. Walking past some Nintendo Switch 2 Kirby Air Riders demo booths that, wow, yeah, okay, this is why the line is so long. Right across from me, Escape from Tarkov Arena. All of your classic traditional roguelikes. Coming around the corner here in the Nintendo area, there's a huge booth with maybe 25% of these gaming consoles set up with Hades 2 1.0 coming out soon. I'm hoping any day now. And the other back half of it are Elden Ring setups, which I can only hope that they've fixed whatever kind of frame rate issues they got going on in there. And very bravely, only maybe like one, maybe two, three, four kiosks with Hollow Knight Silksong playable. I can imagine basically everyone here would be in queue for that, coming out a week from this recording, or in a few days or anything. But yeah, let's see what else we got. So yeah, I'm Scott. I do a podcast on roguelike or roguelite games, okay, or however they're defined these days. Who am I talking with today, and what are you showing off here at PAX West 2025?
Hello, Scott. I'm Jacob from Better Publishing. We're the new company which show their games today. That's our new label, because we are working in Better Gaming Agency from 8 years, and we expand our company with the publishing label. And today I have two roguelike games. The first one is Don't Wake the Beast. If you like Lords of the Ring, and you imagine a Bilbo Baggins who take the treasure from the smog, that's the game. You are a thief, you are going to the dungeons, you must take the treasure, but the tricky part is the most important treasure is secured by a big beast. In first biome you have a dragon, so if you take the treasure from the dragon you must run away because he wants to catch you. Every dungeon is a different generated, so everyone is a different, and our references was the board game Clank, so every sound is very important, because you know, if you go to the golden monets on the floor, they give all the sounds. So you must avoid the traps, because the sound can turn on enemies. So it's a risk-reward game, because if you take a lot of treasure, the weight is too high, and you are not fast. So you must think, what is the best tactic? If I take a lot of treasure and have smaller possibility to run to your tavern, or you don't take anything, go to the dragon, take the treasure, and you are fast and back to the tavern. Of course, after every run, you can sell the items. We have a story, so it's not only typical roguelike focus on action, but we have a story which push you to take the new story adventure. And the second game is Order Automatica. It's a roguelike auto battler. You are fighting on the 3x3 grid with your enemy. Of course, every run is a different, like in roguelikes. Our reference is Balatro, Inscription. You can prepare your own deck. You can level up your characters, and you are fighting with your secret enemy. So I love replayability games. I love roguelike games. Enter the Gungeon is one of my favorite games, Slay the Spire. So our publishing label is focused only with replayability and roguelike games.
Nice. I've been noticing that a lot of interesting game dev stuff has been coming out of Poland over the past 5 to 10 years or so. What do you think is kind of driven that new, or like that more broader renaissance of stuff like out here in the West?
Huh, that's a good question. We bring to the PAX 16 Polish games, so you are here in the Polish game booth, and you know, we have a heart to create the game. We have The Witcher, which is the biggest game from Poland, but we have also more than 500 indie developers in Poland. And we have cool ideas, and I think if you have a good market, if you have a good employees in your company, it's easier to create a good game. And of course, we are still cheap country, so you know, it's maybe difficult, but if you have a good money from Polish company, and the cost of your life is smaller, it give you a better chance to create a better game, yeah? Uh-huh. So we're still growing markets, but I think we are good in game development.
I see that Don't Wake the Beast is running on a Steam Deck here.
Yes, that's right.
Is that kind of becoming a more central focus for indie game devs these days, of like making the Steam Deck kind of a thing to develop for specifically?
Yeah, overall, the Valve is a partner of our Polish booth, so you find the Steam Deck on all our game. And yes, I love the handhelds, I love the Nintendo Switch, I love Steam Deck. And you know, usually Roguelike is a small game with a very deep mechanics, etc. But I love pixel art games, and Steam Deck is a great hardware to play in one moment, okay, I have a time, I take the Steam Deck, 5 minutes, one run, okay, I can finish. So yeah, Steam Deck is a great opportunity for indie developers to create a game.
What are you hoping for success for this weekend, for showing off the stuff here?
Whew, that's a good question, because it will be a busy time. Yesterday we had a meeting with the Valve, today we have a PAX, we have the Mix, so it will be a very busy weekend. And you know, from my perspective, when I see the smile on face, when the people come to my game and play, that's the best thing.
I saw you guys were set up here, White Knuckle, played the demo, loved it. So I thought, I made a special trip to go, okay, got to put it on my itinerary, got to stop here, got to talk to the people behind the game. Who are the people behind the game here?
Hi, I'm Holly. I'm the lead developer of White Knuckle.
I'm Jack. I do music, sound, editor, trailers, a little bit of lore.
I'm Quinn. I do a lot of the art and animation.
Nice. What brings you guys here to PAX?
Well, we launched our game a few months ago, and we've had an amazing reception, and our publisher, Dread, wanted us to come out to kind of show stuff off. We also have a new update coming out next month, The Abyss, which is the fourth region of the game. So we're kind of just showing it off, letting people in the community try out the new content before it's available to the general public. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was, why climbing?
Because I really, really like rock climbing. And then Jack said, okay, climbing, but horror. And then we all went, ooh, and then months later we're here.
Basically, yeah.
It was a random discussion of us saying, man, we haven't done like a game jam or a LAN party or anything in a while. We need an excuse to do that. And then Quinn said, we should do a rock climbing thing. And I said, what if we made it scary?
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that kind of drew me initially to it was like, well, like, I have a lot of friends that are into rock climbing. The Seattle area is like a big rock climbing area. Yeah. And this, it feels like a very unique kind of theme tying the two together. What kind of inspired this specifically?
I think it's like we started out, we knew we wanted to do a climbing game. We always loved horror as like a game genre. And climbing is inherently the stressful, scary thing, right? And so making a game that just merges the two, that makes the stress and the fear associated with climbing and combine that with like other things that are chasing you and other things that are stressful, it just like accentuates it, you know? And so we had a lot of ideas, and eventually we were like, well, we all like big industrial facilities. You know, I'm a big fan of the original Half-Life and like, you know, Black Mesa and Aperture Science and all these things. And so we kind of built a universe that would fit the vibe we wanted to go for. And it all just kind of came together.
Yeah. How did you guys, I guess, yeah, like it feels very Half-Life, very Quake kind of themed to it. Was Definitely. That sort of like the initial art design?
No, it was a little bit closer to the Return of the Obra Dinn, at least when I pitched it. But Holly did some good like exploration early on that led us to believe that that wasn't going to work. And that's when we moved into the look we have now.
In the original idea, it was going to be you're climbing up like a cliff, and it was going to be like rock dwellings and things. Like it was going to be this sort of historical site that you were escaping from something chasing you. Uh-huh. But it changed into this industrial horror setting.
Yeah, it all sort of worked out in the sense that as we explored what would make the game kind of just more fun to play more smoothly, we realized if we put people in more claustrophobic spaces, that might work out better. It like we were able to sort of control the environment better and influence the gameplay, influence the art, sort of vice versa. It just went back and forth for a good 2 or 3 weeks, I would say, until we settled on this.
Yeah.
I'm noticing you have a Nine Inch Nails shirt on here. Did that have a kind of an influence to the sound design at all?
Big time, yeah. Nine Inch Nails is my favorite band, and they absolutely influenced the music of the game, a lot of the sound of the game. I mean, I listen to the Quake soundtrack just while I work on things in general. Like, Quake 1 soundtrack is just a nice, nightmarishly moody, ugly thing to listen to while you work on anything. So, that influenced a lot of the sound design, and yeah, just a lot of the ambient atmosphere of the game, too. I love environmental sound design in particular, so this was a great space to just go wild and make it something insane.
Nice. What does success look like for you guys this weekend?
I mean, for this weekend, Oh, God, I don't know. A lot of good feedback on the new content, probably. Maybe new people seeing the game. One of the things that's crazy for us is, like, a year ago, none of us expected we'd be doing this. Being here and also interacting with members of our community has just been like, that is success in and of itself. You know, yeah. People coming out to see specifically this game is crazy.
Initially success kind of came across like, this might pay for like one semester of my college courses. Maybe that might be okay. And it's ballooned beyond like, I think anything we were expecting.
Yeah.
It took off like a rocket. Like as soon as the demo launched back in October, it's been an insane ride ever since, and we're very happy about that.
So happy.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, thanks, guys. Scott.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you, Scott.
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alrighty.
Well, already off to a great start with some good interviews with some cool looking games. Walk around the show floor here, and I'm hearing this awful banging noise coming from the Borderlands 4 booth. That I can only sympathize with the exhibitors that are right next door to here. And every 5 minutes, it kind of sounds like someone's going into a chamber and just smashing pots and pans. What we got here, it looks like some kind of dummy. There's a lot of broken glass in there. Looks like a great time all around. A very loud time. I feel like they maybe should have double soundproofed it. The first couple times I was walking past this, I thought for sure it was some sort of construction or something still going on. Who am I speaking with today, and what are you showing off here at PAX?
Hi there. Thank you for your time. I'm Husban, also known as McDougla online. That's all my handles on socials. I'm here showcasing Rogue Eclipse. It's a game where you go zoom, zoom, and pew, pew in the most spectacular neon-infused arcadey action possible.
Nice.
Love letter to the likes of Star Fox and Rogue Squadron. To give you an actual answer, it's an epic space flight bullet hell roguelike. And it's set in a universe inspired by Arabesque futurism, which is basically taking my cultural heritage and projecting that 500 years into the future. You basically take on swarms of starfighters, merciless armadas, and have to vanquish a malevolent evil that spans the cosmos.
Nice. That seems like a very unique theme. What inspired you to kind of come up with that?
In terms of the setting?
Well,
I guess, for me, the way I describe this game, it's taking my childhood and distilling it in a bottle. And the thing is, I wanted to take a different approach to science fiction and take my own cultural heritage and see what's there, right? A lot of discoveries such as mathematics and astronomy have their roots in Arabia. So that's one tie to it. But then the other thing was just wanting to bring something different to the table and not just have something that was just entirely derivative of what we usually see in science fiction media. And quite frankly, it's a setting that it just felt like a new exciting frontier for all sorts of new things that players haven't seen before that could happen.
Nice. The PAX show floor has been open for a grand total of maybe an hour or so.
Yeah.
What's the most surprising thing that you've seen people do with your game that you didn't expect them to so far?
I was thinking I made the build slightly easier, as it turns out. It's more difficult than I think was expected. But
that's a sign of a good roguelike, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, for me, but that's the thing. For me, it's having effectively, it's have that one more run, right? And part of the game is, so there's two parts. We have what we call an evolving roguelike structure. So something in the vein of Returnal. Our narrative is actually woven into the structure, so we leverage it. And exactly how you come about that will be for players to discover when they play it.
Uh-huh.
But one of the key things is I love this genre. I could, if we could literally be all day here if I mentioned all the roguelikes that I played. But I also wanted to use that structure to do really interesting things. So for example, even though we are roguelike, if you die mid-run, I don't let you walk away completely empty-handed, so you'll get like new starfighters and components and things like that.
Progression systems.
Exactly.
Kind of thing.
But what can I say? I'm a sucker for being a purist. So very much, you know, playing like old arcade games back in the day, yeah, where when you die, you kind of effectively get set back.
How is the world of developing? This is a very 3D looking game. Yeah. It looks very good.
Thank you.
What's the kind of challenge with doing that style as opposed to the, you know, tried and true, like, you know, every, you think roguelike games, you think top down, yeah, pixel art kind of things.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really chose probably what is one of the most unforgiving genres. Where can the player go? Anywhere. Where can they fly? Anywhere. How close can they get? They can see everything. Yep. Nothing's hidden in this genre. But kind of in a strange way, I actually looked far beyond that. So simplest answer is that's where the bullet hell element really fuses nicely. Where effectively it offers that skill mastery essentially, because that's kind of the thing I'm more in for. I'm less interested in you make your stats go up,
yeah,
and like,
yeah,
that I want it to be like players are gods and mastery of space flight.
Uh-huh.
And they've achieved that, and that is really the main thing here.
Sweet. Well, thanks again. Good luck with the rest of the convention.
Thank you so much for taking the time. Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Who am I talking with, and what are you showing off today at PAX?
Hi, I'm Andrea. I do game design and art for the game.
I'm Bob. We're a husband and wife team, so Arcane Eats is our new game. It's a fantasy cooking roguelike deck builder.
Yeah.
So you have a deck of ingredients and kitchen tools and some magic spells to enchant the cooktops, and then you play your ingredients onto the cooktops and you have to wait for them to cook. So you modify them with the tools and you stack them together with other ingredients, and then customers come in and they're hungry, so you need to make enough food to satisfy them. But there's no recipes. You just cook whatever you think looks good, whatever you think works well together to try and satisfy them. But if you make them wait too long, they'll start getting impatient, they'll complain, and so you try to hold it together until you've got enough food to serve them. And once you've kind of cleared everyone out for the day, you take that money back to town so you can buy new ingredients, hire new kitchen staff that are like passive bonuses to combo, enchant your cooktops with, you know, other kinds of passive rules, and try and create a build that works well together to be like a coherent cuisine strategy for your restaurant, getting stronger and stronger across the run.
Nice. This seems like a very kind of unique take on this, you know, like roguelike deck builders seem to have kind of like a very, common theme of like dungeon crawling,
yes,
things like that. This feels very unique. What sort of inspired that?
Well, I mean, first of all, like we love all these games. We play so many of them. But yeah, like having a fresh theme does a lot to just like palate cleanse a bit, you know, and there's just not that many that aren't super violent, you know. And there's a lot of people that we talk to who are like into cooking, into the kind of lighthearted fantasy of it all, but are like kind of sick of murdering everything. And so just focusing on the positive emotion side of it, of like, you know, making people happy, feeding them the stuff they love and having them be full and satisfied and thrilled when they leave instead of dead.
Yeah.
But also like we love Iron Chef and Top Chef and those like creative cooking shows where you have a creative master who you throw a secret ingredient, you throw a weird curveball at, and then they improvise and do something awesome with it. And that's just like what we love about roguelikes, you know? It's like you learn the systems, you become a master of the systems, and then the game throws random stuff at you and you improvise. And so specifically for a cooking game, that's very different from not just in like roguelike space, but like even for cooking games, they're always, not always, but very frequently they are more like a line cook, high pressure restaurant,
like overcooked sim style, yeah, things. Yeah,
it's like do a recipe exactly as fast as possible against the time pressure. And this is more like you have all the time you need to think because it's turn based, and there's no recipes. You cook whatever you think will be good, and everybody's coming into the restaurant. It's more like a chef's table, you know, like they're here for whatever you think they'll like, right? And so you can do more of the creative MasterChef fantasy, improvising with what the game throws at you to make cool meals, instead of the like high time pressure, you know, line cook simulator, right?
Yeah. How do you go about making, like, you know, it feels like with deck builders, like, synergies between interacting systems is like a really hard nut to crack, or fish to chop in this case. And, you know, like, I feel like with things like, oh, you know, your classic dungeon crawl things, it's like, oh, I have this kind of established trope
right.
to build off of. But with cooking, I mean, as someone, I feel like this resonates with me a little bit. Open up the fridge, like, oh, what am I going to do with all these ingredients? How am I going to get creative with this? Is there kind of like a similar aspect with the cooking angle?
Yeah, I mean, so that's one of the things that's most fun about designing something like this is getting to kind of explore the mechanical space that emerges from the themes. That, like, you know, instead of just doing another round of, you know, the same mechanics that you're familiar with, there's a shortcut there. A lot of people, like, already know those things, so you don't have to teach them, and that's nice. So we have a little extra load to lift here to get you on board with, like, the cooking metaphors. But then we get to play with things like, oh, well, this is seafood. So maybe you get a kitchen staff who's good with like a sushi chef, and so now that seafood doesn't have to cook as long, and now you can serve it immediately raw, and that's a different kind of thing than when you have like the battle nona, like old Italian grandma who slow cooks everything, but she's like just super tough and will just be able to absorb the complaints while people grumble while they wait. Just like deal with it; it'll be good when it comes, and then they're happy. And you know, playing around with those the like metaphors and mechanics, like thinking of spices, different kinds of spices as status effects and elemental properties and stuff, and playing around with what those can mean in this kind of situation.
Yeah.
And then also just like the customer behaviors. And so, like, what does having food cooking on a cooktop mean for what they can do to you, you know? So like this little goblin on screen right now, he'll like knock the top ingredient off whatever's in front of him. And so, you know, you're manipulating this space in front of you too. Like, you know, Slay the Spire, you just drag cards directly to the enemies. But like, here you've got the cooktops that are this other board to play with, and you stack ingredients on top of them. And so there's all this manipulation that can happen there, and a fairly involved little math puzzle that emerges from that layer of like what their hunger values are, what your food values are, how it's split up between the cooktops, whether you really want to stack things together or spread them out, and what kind of synergies come from kitchen staff, cooktop enchantments, ingredients, kitchen tools that are encouraging you to stack or spread or manage that situation.
Is Gordon Ramsay the final boss?
Gorgon Ramsay is one of the possible Act 3 bosses, actually.
Excellent.
Yeah. You nailed it.
Has there been anything surprising with how people have been interacting with the game so far that you didn't expect?
Yeah, honestly. Okay, so we had two big, like, question marks in our mind about who the game really is going to appeal to. On the one hand, we're really deep roguelike deck builder nerds, and we're, like, a little nervous at first that, like, it's got a very kind of cute and friendly aesthetic, and we're a little nervous that hardcore roguelike deck builder folks might assume that it's simpler than it is, because it's pretty complicated. We got a lot of feedback from our friends that are really into the genre that, like, it's a lot to think about. It becomes a satisfying puzzle once you get in there, but especially, again, with, like, having to learn the cooking metaphors for everything, it can feel like a lot. So we're worried that the aesthetic might give people this wrong signal if they thought it was too simple. Luckily, I haven't really been seeing a lot of people warded off by that. On the flip side, though, I've been really surprised that so many people have been coming up because they like the idea of, like, a fantasy cooking game, but they're not really that familiar with roguelike deck builders, but they're, like, getting into it. They're not put off by the complexity the way I kind of worried they might be. And it's a good lesson, because what they actually say is, like, oh, all those cooking games are so stressful. They're so high pressure that I actually get to, like, think. I don't care that it's complicated, because I've got all the time I need to, like, think about my turn. And so that's been kind of a relief, like, oh, cool. And then, like, maybe this actually works for people who are just into a chill cooking vibe, even though it's actually a really cerebral, you know, roguelike deck-building puzzle, because they just have the time to spend. It's not a real-time pressure.
What's it like being a husband and wife co-dev team?
It's pretty great. It's just the two of us, so we don't really have anybody else that we're, like, responsible to. So if we need to take a day off, not a problem. You know, we have kids, so you know, if our kid's sick or has some issue come up, like, it's easy understanding and nobody to feel like we're letting down if we take that moment, and then we can hop back on later and finish the job. And
do you have any favorite recipes that have made it into the game?
Well, so there's no real recipes in the game. You get to do whatever you want. But we have been just, like, sticking foods, ingredients, ideas in that that we think are fun, that we like to explore. So, yeah, I guess sometimes we have to kind of question whether, like, does everybody even know about this kind of food? But at the same time, because you've got this massive catalog of different cards, you know, you get to, like, put some weird niche things in there that only a few people will ever really get. And it's okay. Not everybody has to get everything, so.
Yeah. Nice. Well, good luck.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, only five? Like, you can get in talk for an hour.
I'll be with you till midnight. Please, go ahead.
Okay, great. So I'm Scott. I do a podcast on roguelike games.
Pleasure.
Who am I talking with, and what are you showcasing here at PAX today?
Fantastic. So my name is Shiv. I am head of business development at PAX Autocratica. We are a satirical totalitarian colony sim with roguelite FPS. What that means is you are able to build and manage your own base, pass ideological policies and decrees which shape how your citizens live, and then take those very citizens into space expeditions for FPS roguelite combat. The idea of that being that the gameplay loop starts forming around that interaction or interplay between how your base is formed and what you do in open space. So when you're in space, you're able to get fast-paced FPS action, gather new resources, conscript new troops, and get them all the way back to your base. So while the space element of it is FPS roguelite, where it's always changing, maps reset, the core element of your base stays the same, and that interplay is what the fun is all about.
Well, I mean, just walking past here, it looks very visually impressive.
I thank you for that.
What was the inspiration with going with a very detailed, very graphical heavy roguelike game? Because that seems like it's a hard balance to strike.
I love it. Best question I've got all day. So I think one thing which a lot of games aren't able to perfect is the replayability. Core reason behind that being that you can get very easily saturated into either direction. If you go into FPS too deep, it can become kind of exhausting after a point just having the same gameplay loop. At the same level as well, with base building, I, for one, can get very bored after the first 2 hours of base building. What our game allows you to do is it has fresh replayability, because if you're tired of your base building, go explore space. If you're tired of exploring space, lead your troops into combat. Tired of going into combat, bring it on back to your base. So that unified loop still goes on. And for us, we always wanted to have elements of sci-fi. We wanted to have elements of dystopia. If you ask for inspirations in terms of games, I would say we prefer to have 1:1. We prefer to avoid 1:1 comparisons, but I would say Cult of the Lamb is close in terms of the dystopian sci-fi-ish theme for the darkness, the lore behind it. Risk of Rain for the roguelike is definitely up there. And for the base building clarity, the approachability, the get your guy, make him do this, make him do that, and what happens next, Palworld right up there.
Nice. You said your background was kind of like in the biz dev side. How is that in terms of, like, you know, there's a lot of indie devs who are just kind of like do it all, but like, you know, being able to like market a game correctly and being able to like make sure people see it, all the kind of like, you know, making sure it's successful kind of stuff. How what are the sort of challenges involved with that with a small studio like this?
My second favorite question. So I think a big part of building the game correctly is first understanding what vision you want. So as head of business development myself, I wasn't part of those early days, but a lot of what it included was trying to have a game which has a fun gameplay loop, and trying to get that perfect is always step one. As a marketing and BD guy, I'm not going to lie and say market from day one, because that's not the way stuff is actually built. Once you have a community which is giving you feedback, which is passionate about the game that you've built, once you have a vision that is non-compromisable, then I think getting in the right sort of vision or handheld help for marketing or biz dev is very powerful, because first, the community needs to always feel engaged. Mm. The community is not going to feel engaged only within the game. You need to have outlets for them to go and express themselves outside. We've seen glimpses of this in the past few decades, but with a today's landscape where people rep Fortnite not in the game, they rep it when they breathe and wear that t-shirt. So I think getting outside of that game is only possible with having engines of marketing and biz dev behind it. And I think what I've been able to do is, to a certain degree, get more awareness about the game, get more collaborations that are able to get more passionate people to see the game through different lenses, and communicate that to a community in an extremely strong way time and time again.
What's something that has kind of surprised you about people coming here to the play the couple demo laptops you
have set
up?
People don't leave our seats. People just don't leave. Maximum today, the seat has been empty is 30 seconds.
Wow, nice.
So, I mean, besides jokes aside, I think everyone comes for different reasons. Everyone has different passions here. But the core idea is, if they can gel with our game is very lore heavy, but it also gives you just a pure escape from the day. It gives you a way to completely reset, have your own base, have your own life story, which you just cultivate and grow. And I think giving people from the age of 9 to 70 plus today, in the first few hours already, a glimpse of that, gives us and the entire development team so much joy.
Nice. Well, good luck.
Pleasure. What was your name again?
Scott.
Scott. Pleasure to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. Hi. Here is...
Hey gang, Future Scott chiming in here once again. This is where I would have had the interview that I did with the developers from the game Master of Peace that were showing off at the PAX show floor. But I think because of the proximity to the Borderlands booth or something, the audio was unfortunately totally unusable. And as a result, I can't really put it in here without having to really like waylay your eardrums with like smashing sounds and all sorts of other stuff. So great game. I think this Master of Peace was probably my game of the day of all the ones that I had played. And I thought it had just a really good visual art style too. It was very, very much kind of like Into the Breach, but with chess pieces in a way. And hello, this is, hi Molly, taking... This is my cat. Yes, hi. I knew this would happen. I knew if I left my office door open while recording, the cat would come in doing her best to lobby for dinner 12 minutes, actually an hour and 12 minutes ahead of schedule. But where was I? Yeah, so Master of Peace, great game. Loved playing it on the PAX show floor. But the audio interview quality was just not up to par, unfortunately. But I did send out kind of like text questions to them to come and get back to me. So if that happens, I will link it in the show notes. But otherwise, I'll be linking kind of like all the games that I've been interviewing people here with so far into the show notes, Master of Peace included. But instead, I think what I'll do is I'll insert here a quick little 30-second promo here. I like to famously think that I don't do ads on this program, but this one I think is kind of an exception. So without further ado, let's hear from Danny and David.
Hey, Danny, have you heard of Rogue Pod Lightcast?
Oh, hey, David. You mean our biweekly podcast where we play and discuss a new roguelite every episode and try to figure out what makes a roguelite truly great?
Ah, yeah, that's the one. On RoguePod Lightcast, we've embarked on the impossible mission of creating the perfect roguelite tier list.
If it's so perfect, why is everyone on Reddit always mad at us because Noita's in C tier?
I guess you're going to have to listen to find out. Check out RoguePod Lightcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, you might be thinking to yourself, that's weird for a roguelike podcast to have an advert for another roguelike podcast on their own show, but I'm actually a big fan of Danny and David's program, the Rogue Pod Lightcast. I've listened to every one of their episodes. I think they have just a really great vibe to them, and yeah, I think you should 100% check out what they have on offer. They've also covered a whole bunch of games that we haven't covered, because as you are probably well aware, there's like a bazillion games in this genre, And, you know, why not have multiple rogue-style podcasts? As long as this, the Grog Pod is in, like, the top 10 of roguelike podcasts out there, I'll be happy. But Danny and David, Rogue Pod Lightcast, great show. Also based out of the Puget Sound area. If I had a, you know, nickel for every one of those. Feel free to listen in on their show for a 30-second spot for the Grog Pod here as well, showing up on there. So we've been doing a little trailer swap program. So Rogue Pod Lightcast, great show. Speaking of great shows, let's get back to past Scott on the show floor. This is me grabbing some time with the people who had done the panel. Also, I think very, very appropriately themed with this and Danny and David's program. The panel was called Being an Older Content Creator Doesn't Have to Suck. And actually, it was a really great panel. I sat in on it, and it was just hammering all of the points home of, like, What is it like to be, like, making whatever content is it as a geriatric over 30 kind of a thing? I'll link the PAX West video that they did, or the recording, up on the show notes as well. I was hoping just to get time with maybe one of them after the show, and I actually got time with basically all of them. I think minus one, I forget who, but listen in on a couple minutes that I was able to grab from them at the end. I was noticing that the host of the panel, Tanya, had this really great keychain kind of thing on that had, like, the little charm on the end of it that it was saying, like, social battery, and it had, like, a little physical slider to it, and it was, like, all the way at minimum. So I saw that and I was like, okay, better wrap this up, maybe not make it like a 10-minute interview kind of thing. I need to get me one of those for sure. Listen in on this bonus bit at the afterwards of Being an Older Content Creator Doesn't Have to Suck with panelists Tanya DePass, Keith Dwayne Mitchell, Lauren Urban, Hadil Jean, Tyler Boyce, and Alex Sky. Thanks. Great panel. I was trying to think of like good questions to come up with afterwards, but I was like, nope, you guys covered that. You covered that. Amazing. I have maybe one follow-up question. What is content?
Consumable bite-sized media that people make for money.
What she said. Creative things that you put out there for other people to enjoy.
What is content to you?
What she said.
And I guess maybe to pivot off of that, what does like content mean to you from like a podcast perspective?
Something I can listen to in an hour to 30 minutes.
Yeah, it has to be easily consumable. Like I know that a lot of people have like 3-hour games, but I went through Gilligan's Island, never again. I kind of agree with both. I do prefer podcasts in shorter bite-sized form, but I don't mind if they're longer. But I think what's more important is that it is 100% something that is focused on audio. A lot of people take what started as a video and just turn the audio into a podcast and aren't thinking about the audio-only version of it, and so you lose something in the translation. So podcasts are best when it is geared towards something and where you only need the audio 100% and you get all of what is necessary.
What do you guys think about AI stuff invading the podcast realm content-wise?
I hate it. Yeah, AI's coming for my job. I'm going to meet it in the parking lot. AI, please leave.
No, fuck AI. Fight it.
I'm going to in the parking lot. But no, I worry about AI because it's not, I just don't think it's possible to use it responsibly. There are no guardrails. And I'm tired of it scraping my work. Stop.
And to be clear, we're talking about large language models that steal other people's content.
Generative AI.
And so, yeah, there's no ethical way to use it. It is not smart at all. It is consuming large quantities of resources every time it is used. And the people who say, I need to use it to come up with creative ideas, are basically just recycling stuff out of like a word salad. It's not actually doing anything for anybody. It's stealing from other people's content, whether it is art, whether it is music, whether it is podcasting, whether it is whatever it is. It is just taking stolen stuff from a whole bunch of creators and putting it in a blender and spitting it out in other places. So yeah, those kind of generative AI models are just bad for every part of every industry.
Also, one last thing. If you use AI, all of this consider, you're just silly. You're silly and unserious.
There you go.
Very silly.
What makes you guys the most optimistic about technology with podcast stuff coming up?
People, with the whole AI, I find people becoming that more invested in their art. They're spending more time on their art, and they're fighting for art, podcasts included. And I think that is lovely and wonderful.
The technology I'm the most optimistic about is we're recording this right now on a phone, and it's probably got some decent sound to it. 10 years ago, this would have been impossible. This would have been, the sound would have been horrific. This would have been a chonky device. It would have probably required a giant battery. The fact that the actual physical technology to do what you're doing right now has become easier and cheaper and easier to more accessible. The tools to do the creative thing that people want to do have become easier to access. So it's that difference between I'm not having technology do the creative thing, I'm having technology make it easier for me to do the creative thing.
Mm-hmm. I also like the fact that technology now empowers people to do things that they were afraid to do in the past. A good example is VTubers. VTubers, a lot of people want to do this, but they can't do it because they're afraid to show their face. But a lot of people say they need to show something to represent who they are. With the new technologies out there and the programs, the applications, the processes that are in place, that people become VTubers and live their life and do what they want to do and have fun.
Great. Thanks, you guys. Great panel.
Thank you.
Really an incredible day of PAXing today here on Friday. And standing out here watching everyone go through the Risk of Rain 2 PC tournament, as it is, I think, going on a timed basis, but never have I seen so many monitors all running Risk of Rain 2 at the same time, and it's kind of a glorious sight to see all sorts of wild, I guess, pixelated nonsense going off on all the monitors at the same time. I'm curious to see who the winner will be, as I did the Vampire Survivors winner interview last time. Curious to see how they scored, how they liked it, and what the overall vibe is. Fun. I'm Scott. I run a podcast on roguelite games, whatever those things are. Did I hear right that you were first and second place?
Yeah, first and second, both on Railgunner. I got, the first score was 2048. That's all that matters.
So it was by time?
Yeah, it was by time. Last year, it was most amount of points in 60 minutes. So, people just looped on Drizzle and got the win. But this one was, fastest time. I was so locked in this time. I have 700... I think I have, 800 hours at this point.
Wow.
I've been rigorously trading for this moment.
So this was an event that you were actively seeking out.
Yes, yes.
To compete in. Interesting.
Yeah,
so
I did it last year because they had a tourney last year. Yeah.
Nice. Any tips for burgeoning Risk of Rain 2 players? You did it with Railgunner, right? So DLC.
Yeah. Movement speed is your best friend. If you're trying to get the fastest time, shaped glass. I built two shaped glass. I was doing four times as much damage. I killed Mithrix instantly. There's a lot of tech on Railgunner, specifically. You can pillar skip with no items. It's just pretty difficult.
I don't mean to exclude the other parts of the posse here, but how have you enjoyed the con so far? Is there anything else you're looking to over the weekend?
I'm here for 4 days. I went to the Gearbox thing hoping they'd announce some Risk of Rain news today, but they're just oh, hey, we're announcing a stream. We're going to be announcing stuff on the 5th, but I think I'm going to see the voice actors for Clair Obscur tomorrow. I want to play Kirby Air Riders. Just a lot of demos. I played a lot of really fun indie games. I'm a big indie game fan.
any ones that stand out so far?
There's Swap Meet, which is a lot like Risk of Rain. I've been keeping my eye on it for a while, and I thought it was so cool when I saw it here. It's like roguelike, but you like swap out your body parts, and it's super silly. It's a lot of fun. I think there's a playtest soon. And then Kirby Air Riders, because I really like that game on the GameCube.
Cool. Well, thanks. Congrats again. Yeah. And enjoy the rest of the con. Well, you know how they say Rome was not built in a day? Well, they also say that you can't see everything at PAX in one day. I think this kind of concludes my coverage for PAX for this year, as I was so excited to go back to the main convention center after going and watching the Risk of Rain 2 tournament. Like, oh, I've got to go and check out other games that people have recommended. There's always so many things you just walk by and you're like, oh, I'll do it a little later. And then you get up there and they say, oh, sorry, the convention show floor closes at 6 p.m. and it's like 5:58 as you start rolling up that escalator. So word to future Scott, or I guess future Scott, next time, yeah, make sure to just go and see everything. It's always fun coming down here to downtown Seattle to experience video game conventions firsthand, talk to lots of interesting people, play lots of interesting games, and just take in the overwhelming visual spectacle and sensory overload that accompanies 10 hours of walking around looking at video games. So I'm going to throw it back to you, future Scott. This is past Scott signing off as I walk down to catch a bus to head home for some grandma babysitting over the Labor Day weekend. Well, thanks again, past Scott, for doing all of that recording and giving future Scott the notes that I probably need to get a pop filter for my phone as I do any more of these kind of recordings in the future. Yeah, I think, like, once again, always have a great time at PAX. This is one of those, like, wake-up call things of, like, wow, maybe I do need to get the full weekend pass and just need to go every day and just scope out everything on day one, and then day two be like, all right, now interview time, or, like, yeah, just there's no way you can see it all in one day. Weekend pass, 100% recommended. But yeah, that's going to wind down our special here, as my cat is angrily demanding food from the hallway. You can send in some long form text correspondence to our email, grogpodzone@gmail.com. You can see all of my unhinged ramblings about the Game Awards at our Mastodon at grogpod@gamedev.place. And grogpod.zone is the one stop shop that just has everything. Just send your friends there. Grogpod.zone. Has all of the stuff, all of the mutable, irrefutable rankings and such. But to play us out, here is going to be a little teaser for our kickoff to season 4. God, 4 seasons of this already. I don't know how my co-hosts have put up with me for this long, but season 4 kicking off with an oldie but a very goodie, very popular, potentially frog in my throat as I almost say it, maybe traditional roguelike, ? We're revisiting the Mystery Dungeon series, and we are coming back to the Mystery Dungeon series with Pokemon Mystery Dungeon Red and Blue Rescue Team, all the way back from, I think, 2004 or something, way back when. But yeah, playing us out here will be some tunes to get you in the mood for rescuing that Doduo that's fallen into a pit.